Welcome to Cabrona y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as...
Lisa Simpson. I'm sorry, but she had a whole fucking queer phase post-college grad. She not only dated a woman, she had a polyamorous phase where she dated two women. And then she brought them home.
Wait, I thought it was one woman and then one guy.
No, it was like it was a woman with like short hair and then a businesswoman with like long hair.
Oh my God, Lisa.
Yes. Into it.
Yeah. She did that. Shout out Lisa. She's the vegetarian.
That's why she's our favorite.
She's our favorite forever. Our activist queen. She's, our lizard queen.
She's the and one she's that we She's a musician.
Oh, yes. She's a saxophonist.
She's a sax player.
What? Watch out, world.
She does everything.
What's poppin', chingona?
What's going on, Pat?
Hey, I'm so happy to be here.
I was literally just gonna be like, and who's in front of us right
Library
now?
Library Bay!
Hi, Library Bay!
I'm actually here, I'm She's so here excited! With us
in the flesh.
I don't know, this is a very special moment for me, one of my favorite podcasts. I'm on an episode by myself!
Stop, I'm gonna cry.
One of our favorite people.
I am pass crying. Out and die.
I mean, y'all know I'm always texting y'all when I listen to episodes. I'm like, oh my God!
I'm like, oh shit. I'm like, oh, she on that episode. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. No, but yeah, it's fucking amazing to have you here because, like, it's been an interesting fucking ride this weekend. I know this is going to come out way later than when we're recording.
Not
but
too much later.
Not too much later.
A couple weeks only.
A couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. So but a couple weeks ago.
A couple weeks ago.
We reunited.
Yeah.
Here in Dallas, Texas.
We're, like, actually all in the same room.
Oh yeah,
we can actually like touch hands and hold each other.
And it feels so good. Mm-hmm. That was amazing. But oh my God, what
are
the
we
fuck,
all tired?
Dude? I'm, dude. Okay, so we went out to the club last night. Shout out the Colores. Shout out
Fabi Fav.
Shout out Fabi Fav. Shout out Eva. It was fucking wild in DeBellum. That's all I have. It took me like 20 minutes to park.
Yeah.
What the fuck.
It took me a while too. It was, like, a lot of fun, and I left a little bit early because I had to, but I had so much fun with you guys.
Me too.
We were doing the SpongeBob, no, the Woody Shake.
The Dobby?
The Woody and Dobby Shake.
The Dobby.
Yeah. There's this, like, video of Woody and Dobby.
It corrupted me.
In front of Hogwarts, like, dancing to the na 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 na. I wonder if I could just play, like, the music, because the music is so funny to me.
Play the music. Oh,
yeah, and I'll try to, like, retweet it on, like, on CYC podcast or something, but it's like the funniest video in my entire life, and I think the dance moves are so fucking clutch. So I showed everybody at dinner beforehand this video, and I was like, this is how I'm gonna be dancing all night, so if I look funny, like, that's why. Just so you know, I'm gonna do this all night long, and this is what the song sounds like, and it's Woody from Toy Story and Dobby from Harry Potter dancing, and then just fucking
in
twitching
in front of Hogwarts.
Yeah. Oh God, I played it too late, hold on. And then it just
makes like weird cat meows noises.
Yeah, and it starts like
their whole body is just like
it. Yeah, their bodies start distorting.
Their whole bodies just do that noise. They go boom.
Yeah, and so me and everybody were like, you know, like they would see me doing it and they would do it with me, and it was just the funniest fucking thing.
No, but when you left, you missed it. The straights. Okay,
the
so we
straights.
Were getting to this. Oh my fucking God! Like, there
spill
was
that to you.
The straights, okay, the woman, the femme-looking one, jumped on the fucking stage and started twerking for the mask-looking one, and he stuck his face in her butt, and, like, he was smelling her entire, like, asshole.
Wait,
and I was
what?
Just like, oh, what am I witnessing?
What is happening?
Are the straights okay?
I don't know, dude, but it was, and they didn't stop, and he was super into it, and they were both into it, and then we were just
on the
like,
stage?
Oh, this is really
yes,
awkward.
On the stage, dude. No one was like, everybody was just like, what in the, what
you know what,
doing?
I'm not mad that I left.
It was fucking hilarious. They weren't the only ones. It was like everybody in there was starting to get really, really
It gets
really
pretty
funny.
Nasty in there.
No, it was hilarious. I was
it's
laughing.
So interesting because it started off so like chill and classy. And
I know,
was, like,
and we
nobody
walked
outside
and then we came back
we went
in
outside,
and it was like we couldn't even walk anymore. I was like, Fabi,
it took me 20 minutes to get into the restroom. And I was like, fuck, like Maria and them had already gotten there. So I was like, I want to go over there, but I got to pee.
They were basically smashing on the dance floor, but, like, drunk straight people.
The straights be wild.
They were super wild. And, you know, I don't hang out with the straights.
I was like, where am I? I'm just awkwardly not dancing.
And the music was fucking fire, but it was just, like, the
straights was DJ, wild. Shout out.
Yeah, shout out all the DJs. But
will you be my friend and mute more?
Yeah, they were
shit. DJs.
They were awesome, but the straight people react very funny in the fucking in the Christmas season, so it was hilarious.
Wild, then.
Yeah, but yeah, so that was that was our weekend, I guess. Like that, you guys missed it though. It was fucking hilarious. Me, Maria and like Glow were just like fucking pointing and laughing, like no fucks given. It was nice.
Fascinating.
I like making fun of straight people.
So what are we talking about today, guys?
Pat, what are we talking about today?
Oh my god, I'm here
my
to talk.
What are we talking about?
I was like, my no, no. We are here to talk about Alfonso Cuarón's Roma.
Yes. Well, Alfonso Cuarón's work, too.
And his work,
you know,
in general.
Children of Men and Roma. So
shout out Prisoner of Azkaban, even though we're not talking about it.
You know, I have
we could talk about it a little bit.
About
what do you
Prisoner
say?
Of Azkaban.
That is my favorite one.
My least favorite movie.
Wow.
That's like
the events from the book were completely different from the fucking movie, and I was upset.
You can say that about every single one.
No, but better con más ganas, because when he got his fucking broomstick, he got it the wrong time chronologically. Everyone looked fucking crazy, and I was like, this is my favorite
book. But that's how why I liked it, is because it wasn't like Chris Columbus, the one that directed the first two, made it all like childlike and like happy and serene, and that's not how it was the whole time. No. So it was just like, it was like he was a little baby, and then he fucking like finally turned into a teenager, and then it got really dark, because it showed all kinds of stuff that was going through, like his puberty stage, obviously, like that was like early stages of them like growing up. And then it was, like, Sirius Black and him coming in, and they're being like, oh, what is this?
Having, like, daddy issues. Honestly, like, the fact that, like, the third movie was so different can almost be, like, yeah, representative of his going through these changes. And, you know what I mean? Like, you get a little older, you get a little more freedom, and you start to do wild shit with your friends. Like, you get giddy like that. You get weird like that, mm-hmm. You know?
I love it.
And I actually really like the style.
Manti, that movie. Like, I do not rewatch it.
That's literally my favorite one. I will not watch the first two. I always, when I binge watch them, I start from three and go.
What?
But
I would at least watch the first two.
I've watched the first one so many times, like in English and Spanish. I even tried French a little bit. But those two, I won't watch as much anymore.
In my defense, I don't rewatch any of them like that, though.
Well, then there you go.
There we go. Maybe that says more about me then. Mm-hmm. I don't fuck with the movies.
Yeah,
so,
generally.
Alfonso Cuarón. He's obviously he's a Mexican director. He's also white. let's be real.
White, upper middle class.
I would say just upper class. Like, dude was like, his dad was like a fucking scientist. Mm-hmm. I forgot what his mom did, but it was something pretty impressive, I thought.
She was a biochemist.
No, the dad was a biochemist.
No, she was too. She stopped being one to go be like, to do something else. She actually, yeah, she's a biochemist. Like in Roma, how she actually, yeah, she actually is that. And then she stopped doing that, became something else.
Hmm. Okay.
It's all based on,
it's probably how
life.
They met, yeah. The father and the mother.
And he's from Mexico City, mm-hmm. As well, so like super city kid. And he got like hella education too, and he was connected to a lot of really impressive people early on. Like, this isn't like a normal story for, you know,
anyone.
For, yeah, exactly. So he comes from a place of privilege, but like you mentioned earlier, he acknowledges it. He doesn't shy away from it. Doesn't necessarily mean that, like, you know, he gets to, like, I don't know, get to pass, I would say, because, like, you know, he doesn't completely represent a lot of people. You know, I think he's definitely someone to admire, but, you know, he had a lot of, I guess, like, open road to travel, whereas we have a lot of things in our way.
I mean, I think what's interesting about his story is that, like, even though he grew up with all this privilege, I think he was... You can tell by his stories and by his POV that he's often been surrounded around people who aren't of the same means as him. So I'm not giving him a pass, because there's a lot of people that still have a lot of criticisms, and they're fair. They're fair criticisms of him being privileged white. And I mean, those three dudes.
I mean, literally, Guillermo del Toro, Iñárritu, and all of them are both, all of them are white passing Mexican
straight
men.
Upper middle class, yeah. Straight white passing dudes. So that's why I'm like, at the same time, like, I don't shy away from the fact, but he's different from them and what he actually decides to focus his lens on. Yeah. Versus Guillermo, he's...
Fantasy.
Inarritu is more like poetry, but it's definitely very, like... I don't know if he really understands a different class from him.
Yeah.
That's fine, though. He makes really... He's a beautiful cinematographer.
He does his own kind of art.
He's but, valid. Like, the difference, I think, with him is that he... What he centered Roma around was his nanny, which is someone he actually loves. And I feel like he's inserted her in maybe every single movie. And every single thing that's maybe a memory of her, he's made a movie out of. So I think that changes his perspective, and because of who he loved, it defined what he created later on. So I think that's what's interesting about him, and I think that's why I give him a pass.
And I think he's also aware of, like, his classism that he had and that he grew up with, because in all of his films, he's always highlighting that. I mean, Y Tu Mamá También, one of them is upper middle class politician family, and then the other one's, like, obviously lower class. And, like, same goes with Children of Men. Like, the whole thing is a classism story, and, like, who makes it and who doesn't. Like, that guy literally had art pieces for no reason, like, just to have them.
Right.
His cousin or something.
Ass. Yeah, he had that big-ass Picasso. Like,
right.
Just chilling in his dining room for no reason.
So, yeah, he does. It. That's always, like, for me, I like that he always spoke on classism and, like, politics, which is not something that he even says himself. In the period before films that were out before me, they weren't able to talk about politics and the government in Mexico, and he has the freedom to do that now, and he does it in a way that isn't, like, necessarily saying, like, xenophobia or anything, unfortunately, but he is still highlighting the fact that, like, the government is corrupt with all the stuff that related even to Roma compared to, like, the stuff that happened in 68. So, yeah. I think that's the only reason why I'm, like, I would give a pass to.
Yeah, same.
Because, like, I obviously am aware I wish there were more, like, brown representation, not white Latinx.
Or even just, like, poor people coming up and getting shit done instead of just, like, people that had a lift, you know what I mean? Had a leg up. But I still think, yeah, like, he has this obsession with classism, and, like, from what I've seen, he knows that it's almost kind of like a white guilt or a privileged guilt. Like, he says it, he knows it. Mm-hmm. And, like, from what I've seen as well, I think with Roma, he set out to just kind of do something personal about his childhood. And he, like, realized while he was working on that he needed to make it about his nanny. You know what I mean? That wasn't the original purpose. And I think that's kind of cool, like, because it's the whole process.
It's literally the one that
raised them. Right. And the whole process seemed like he just kind of went with what was as natural as possible. And I think that's really cool. Like, that's a really interesting privilege, but really interesting way of filmmaking.
Yeah, and not just that. He said he based it off, like, a memory, his memories. Mm-hmm. And you can tell that they're his memories. And he actually, like, verified with Libo, his nanny. Mm-hmm. So it's I don't know.
And he didn't even let the actors look the script or anything. Anybody in the cast and crew, like, it was literally as it was happening, like...
They were in the dark, and he shot it chronologically, which, if you know a little bit about how shooting works and how scripts work, it's going to cost you a lot more money to shoot it chronologically, but he had to do it that way because of the script, and because that was going to, you know, also give him, like, the most natural way possible to do this thing. And, yeah, like, he had Liboria Rodriguez, or he called her Libo Mama, come to the set and look at the stuff that they'd shot, and, like, he would see her cry and be like, should I not do this? Like, I won't do this if you don't want me to do this. And she would look at these certain scenes, and, like, she would be feeling bad for the kids and not for herself in it. Like, she was literally so selfless, you know? Like, it's just amazing.
Well, I mean, I feel like most of his movies are centered around her. I have my own running theory about literally every single memory of her is his movie.
I mean, every one of them has
every single movie is her.
Y Tu Mamá También has este, ¿cómo
se llama? She's literally in Y Tu Mamá También. She is the actual nanny in that movie. So, and then not just Tu Mamá También, like, every single movie is in Roma, and then you realize that every single thing he's done, I feel, has been based on her. And I think that's even how I convinced my mom to watch Children of Men with me, because I was like, let's get into Roma then, since we're doing it already. Before we move forward and talk about Children of Men, what did you guys think about Roma?
I was like, I know both of us probably had the same amount of feelings, because you said you only, like, released, like, 3 tears. And I was like, that was me too, because, like, I legitimately felt the tears coming, but I don't typically cry. And I just felt that pain the whole film. Like, you're feeling all the women's pain in all these movies, and it was awesome to see, like, the women being the powerful, strong women that they had to be, like, that we are, that we're unfortunately, like, raised to be all the time, and the men were really shitty, so, like, the fact that it did that, like, really tugged my heart, and, like, gave me all kinds of different feelings for a lot of different reasons, but, yeah, I loved it.
I think, like, it had been so hyped up when I watched it that I was thinking, like, damn, like, what if, like, I don't like this as much as everybody else. I was actually truly worried, especially, like, at the beginning, because it was good. Like, they had really long shots, and I always appreciate those because I know how difficult they are to get, because, like, you have to time these things so perfectly. The actors have to work with you so well to do these extremely long shots where you don't really necessarily know what's going to happen next because you can't see ahead of you. And that's something that he does in Children of Men as well. So just production-wise, I was really impressed, even when the storyline started off kind of slow. But it's, yeah, like, especially towards the end, I think it was really, like, when you start to realize, like, how the main character, which is played by Yalitza Aparicio, and her name and is Cleo in the show, in the movie, like, when you realize, like, this woman is so extraordinary, when it really hits you, like, that's when I got emotional. That's when I was like, this woman is, like, beyond all these other people, like, and nobody will ever realize that within the story, you know?
No, I mean, I liked it, and I did cry, but I think I was feeling very different from both of y'all. I was less, I was, of course, impressed with the way he shot it, but I think I was more interested in the things that I am obviously obsessed with, is why we have this podcast, is who was the lead, what was she doing, mm-hmm. And not just that, like, I was feeling the class. And another thing that really touched me, the real reason I cried, is my mom would have been around the same age as Cleo's character. And then my mom also, I mean, she's not an indigenous woman from Oaxaca, but my mom also cleans houses in the United States. And my mom also comes from the same kind of place, maybe, that you know, her character comes from. So I was seeing something different. And then when... I just, her youth and my mom's youth, and hearing those songs, when I heard Juanga, like, on the radio, I just imagined my mother. So for me, it was a lot more personal and less to do with maybe the movie. It was more like, I'm seeing a brown woman who looks like my abuela, you know, like, the way that really, like, she's getting treated really nicely, like, if we think about it, a lot better than the way
Eva and I even told you after we watched and we all walked out of the theater that, like, it was mind-boggling, because, like, my dad's family grew up in Mexico. Like, that's where he grew up. So one of my cousins in Mexico City, outside of it, she has an aunt, like, a maid that is an indigenous woman. And she, like, treats her like crap and talks to her ugly. And it makes me and Eva, like, uncomfortable. And we're just like, oh, my God, like, why? But, like, she also has, like, a room for her and, like, takes care of her kids and, like, gives her clothes for the kids and, like, helps her with stuff. But it's just, like... We've seen like how unfortunately they are treated, and she's even told us, like, the fact that her maid's, like, husband or boyfriend doesn't want her to teach her kids Nahuatl, which is, like, wild to me, because why would you want to erase that, like, and, like, that language? So that's why I was like, when you saying all that too, it definitely hits me as well for those reasons. But I'm obviously just a fan of the director, and I love that he, like, was the DP, because he didn't have Chivo this time.
He didn't.
Which was wild. Like, he wouldn't. Yeah, it was all him doing it. He said he had to separate between being the director and being, like, DP. Like, it was two different styles of ways he had to direct things, because his shots were, like, really important as well.
No, yeah. And I mean, just centering an indigenous woman in her being showcased as, like, this hero, this otherworldly kind of woman. I thought that was interesting, and I thought, I mean, seeing a life, you know, and seeing a brown life and seeing it matter is very interesting, and very, like, it's a nuanced story to tell, and I feel like, I watch it every time, and I feel like I see something different, and so that's testament to his, you know, directing and everything he does. He's amazing. But again, I cried because, like, I was just feeling like that was the time my mom was young, and she was in deaf, and she heard about the 68 and everything that happened after that in the 70s, and the class disparity, because my uncle's white and it happens to him, and it's weird. It's all,
yeah, literally there. My cousins in Mexico City all are, like, my dad's, like, they look all white, and we're all brown, so it's just always, like, interesting when we get there and we're like, wow, literally people are seeing everything by, like, considering like people ugly because they're brown and like other people are like white passing, or they want to do that manzanilla like shampoo to make their hair blonde, which I'm like, why? Appreciate who you are.
And that's a lot of things that I guess people outside of Mexico didn't, maybe they don't see it, maybe only us because we are Mexican or we know of that, but like he was making a lot of subtle commentaries on colorism and classism in Mexico then and now. Mm-hmm. We know it's still happening now.
Oh, so, for sure. I was in Roma in September and it's still like really weird to see everything, like, because it's like considered like an upper part of town in Mexico City, and you just see like the classism there, and like people are dressed up to go to the fucking mercado, like what?
To the mercado.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And like they had all like the Asian restaurants and everything over there, and I was like, this is a really fancy like Japanese ramen place. Mm. I don't know, it was weird.
So what did you think of the characterization of the children and the white family?
I thought it was kind of accurate, to be honest. Like, it was just, yeah, they never tried to hide like the fact that they have a lot of shitty parts of them. They're kind of really full, like not full of themselves. They care about themselves more. You know, like they go through this really emotional moment with Cleo, and then right after they go right back to being the exact same way, where they're like, I don't know, it was frustrating.
Yeah,
to
when
see.
They're like, oh, we love you, make us like a.
Yeah.
When they get back from the beach.
The plátano, what is it called? The licuado de plátano. Mm-hmm. And then, like, right after saying that they love her and they want to go visit her hometown, they're like, oh, go make us a licuado.
Well, that sounds like even. That sounds like even when they went on to the beach before, like, when they were getting ready and, like, there, they were asking her to do stuff.
Right.
When she was supposed to be on vacation mm-hmm. with them.
Yeah, it's pretty trash. Like, it was an accurate representation, is all I can really say. And it was definitely like such a place of privilege. Like, what did you guys think of those scenes? There was like several scenes with the car going into a garage, different cars but going into the garage.
So, okay, I listened to this interview with Inarito interviewing Cuarón, and it was funny because he said he intentionally made it look like something going into a hole that isn't supposed to fit there would very phallic type of thing, and he was saying that he did that intentionally, where he had like the dad had like this huge extravagant car, and like obviously like in, he's like shitty and he's like literally running over shit, and it's like tells you like literally that the men are trash in this whole film. Like, he was like the trashy person, and she like had to obviously carry the weight, like the mom had to carry the weight of the man. And when she's driving his car, it gets even more fucked up because it's literally the man. And then finally when she has her nice little car, like she fits and she's fine because she's like, fuck this dude, I don't need him in my life anymore, I'm a 10 times better without him. So
with this tiny little like detail, and I guess not super tiny, but this with this visual detail, she kind of goes more into the white family stuff without decentering the indigenous woman. It was like, I thought it was like really,
I think,
nifty.
He gave, like, obviously because it's his family, I think he gave a very like, he was very nice to the white people in this movie, which I have to be aware of because I know my own white passing shitty ass family is like 8 times worse than them, and if they were going to make a movie, of course they'd try to make themselves less shitty. So even my mom noticed that. She's like, well, you know, for one thing, they're really, really nice in this movie. Even if you think they're being shitty, she's like, they're actually really nice. Mm-hmm. And that's the fucked up part. And
in comparison,
because they like usually talk down to them and make them feel like crap at all times. Like,
they were really nice.
They like to let them like watch TV and like hang out with them, and still like obviously was telling her to do stuff. Mm-hmm. Like,
but they like gave her hugs and stuff. Mm-hmm. They were like nice to her, and the children were allowed to be around her. So mm-hmm. it was a lot of things where I was like, okay, like, I get why you love her. I get this kind of nanny situation is a little bit different than a lot of people's. But I feel like he was really nice to his own family.
Well, I guess the excuse there that could be said that could probably, because he talks a lot about how this particular movie is based on like his memories, and that's why he made it in black and white, because it was like a memory and you seeing it in the past. So as a kid, that's how he's gonna remember it, right? He's gonna remember it way nicer and softer than it actually was.
Well, no, not just that, he actually like would verify with Libo to actually make sure that he was remembering it right. And I thought that was another interesting thing, that he wasn't just like, oh, me. I remember it. It was fact. No, he actually checked with her and was like, you need to let me know if this is even
what happened. Apparently he was like, he just kind of kept calling her and being like, tell me more about this. Tell me more about that. And at some point she got suspicious and was like, why do you keep asking me this random shit?
Women
and
he doing finally, emotional labor yet again.
Right? Which is like, that made me kind of uncomfortable to read. I was like, so you're just like getting all this information out of her and she's just thinking, she's having a conversation with somebody that cares about her, which isn't completely wrong. But then at the same time, then he brought her in for the process later, so it wasn't too bad.
No, it wasn't that bad. Again, it's centering a brown woman where it's not white savior at all. It's the opposite. She's saving the fuck out of those white people mm-hmm. every second of her fucking existence, which, I mean, a lot of people, their problem with that is, you know, the actual fact of the matter is that that's the way it is. That's the reality of a lot of Mexican people, a lot of indigenous people in Mexico. That's their reality. That's their truth, is that they don't have a life. Their life is centered around these white people. As much as we want to make them the center of this movie, the reality is that even though we've made this movie about a brown woman and how she's amazing and how everyone around her is pretty much sucks, the reality is that she's still serving them. And I think that's what a lot of people can't stop being uncomfortable about. And I get it. But at the same time, I'm still going to defend it because I love this movie so much.
Yeah, that's why I was like, when people were trying to argue with the whole thing of being like, we're tired of seeing like maid and house worker, like housekeepers as like a plot line for women in like these films. Yeah. And I'm just like, but there still is very clearly like a lot of women are doing this.
The problem isn't the movies. The problem is the society that the movie is showing you. The reality.
Well, at least it's not fucking Maid in Manhattan. It's like real ass shit.
But that's the thing. Like, people are upset at a movie when you should be upset at the reality that we're actually mm-hmm. living. You should actually give a fuck about the real indigenous woman mm-hmm. standing outside your house. Like, yeah. Why don't you give a fuck about that versus being mad at a movie? Like, there's a lot of other things to focus mm-hmm. on, and you're going to be mad at a movie. That's what I'm like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah,
you know, stemming off of that, I have a lot of my Mexican family members on Facebook. Like, it's the only way I've ever really communicated with them, or that I can these days. And the argument that they were kind of having is like, this movie is made for white hipsters and people who feel guilty because the indigenous people that they talk about don't have access to Netflix. You know, it's at the end of the day made for other people, and that's been a lot of their argument, is that like, yes, it's centering white.
But and the thing is also, though,
mine too.
Cuaron has like openly said like, it's out, it's available. He wanted people to use projectors and like stream it, make it available for everyone. Like, I think that's a reason why he also agreed to do Netflix. Yalitza, she didn't know who Cuaron was before this film. She had no clue who he was. He was like, who is this man? Why is he trying to like hire me? She had just finished school to be an educator in her hometown, and he kept like pestering her about doing the job, and she's like, I don't know. And they like asked her what Netflix was, and she knew what it was. Everybody knows what it is. Everybody knows it's a household name. And I think he partially wanted to do that because he knew it was easier access to make it available to everyone, which I still think is really dope. Because I'm like, I know like 5 people that are on my Netflix account. I'm the one paying for it.
It's definitely it was a classist thing to for my cousin to say. Like, I'm not like denying mm-hmm. that, but it still kind of hit home a little bit. I mean, let's be real, like, there are still a lot of whether we like to admit it or not, there's a lot of communities of people that look like Yalitza who do not have access to this shit. Like, this shit, I kind of agree, this is made for hipsters like us and like white hipsters. This is made for us.
We literally saw all the UNT Latinx
film
students, all of them, at like, the screening,
and you know,
we all pulled up, we're like, wow, we're finally here, brown representation, right.
And that doesn't mean that it's wrong. That isn't, you know, like Eva and I were talking about this exact same argument. She's like, okay, but still, like, white privileged Mexicans and people need to see this too. I'm like, mm-hmm. yes, but then at the end of the day, not that this is wrong, this is fine, but at the end of the day, it's made for them. It's not made for people, indigenous people.
But like, then we go back to a different problem. We keep talking about movies as the problem. Movies aren't the problem. Society is the problem. The way that society has done this to people is the problem, and the people that need to actually, again, like we talk about it, we can see the humanity in everyone. White people are the only ones that seem to fucking forget that other people are human. So that's what I'm saying. Like, indigenous people don't have a problem. Like, people mm-hmm. of color don't have a problem with seeing other people's humanity. And if there's something in this movie you see that you don't like, guess what? Look in the fucking mirror. There's something work you need to do in your society, in your daily life. There's some work you need to get done. Not, you can be mad at a movie all day for telling you the fucking truth. It's like, if someone tells you your fucking truth to your fucking face, you don't want to hear it. You want to blame someone else. But the reality is, you need to change your shit, boo. So if you're mad at a movie, you need to be mad at the society in which you were brought up that made it okay for you to accept this reality. That's what needs to change, not a fucking movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We talk about this all the time. Like, you know, movies, not no one, a lot of people, there's plenty of people in the world that don't have access to this kind of art. And that's fine. They're living their reality. They're living their art. And the only people that don't see that reality are fucking white privileged people that have access to these things.
Yeah.
They're the ones that need to fucking take a look and go, oh, wow, yeah, my nanny takes care of my kids, doesn't speak English. She's a human. So again, if there's something you see you don't like, it's not even, has nothing to do with the movie. It's just showing you your fucking truth. So I stand by this movie so hard because I'm
this is a great movie. Like, I still think that it was made for more privileged people. And I think that's something we gotta acknowledge. But there's nothing wrong with the movie. Like, the movie's fucking great. Like, and it was almost, it's something that I don't even like to think about. But the fact that she got pregnant while she was working and being a nanny for these people, my mom got pregnant with me and my brothers when she was being a nanny for other people, for rich white people, like, and obviously, like, she wanted us, she kept us and shit, but, like, that shit's hard too.
Can we highlight the fact that, I don't know, it really, I was really, really happy and almost like, wow, because of the fact that they, she openly was able to say, like, she didn't want this child.
And she didn't want it,
and she felt bad, and she, I think she had, like, internally, she was trying to hold it in because she thought she couldn't feel upset about the idea of having to bear a child. But the fact that she finally was, like, open to be, like, I didn't want her.
That's pretty fucking progressive.
I was just, like, when she said that and she was, like, literally, like, crying while children are holding her, telling them that she didn't want this girl in her life, I was just, like, wow.
She was like that poor girl, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't even want her, like,
because she was just like, no la quería, and I was just like, it literally pulled my heart. That's, and I was like bawling because I was like,
I was just shook.
The fact that
I was like out of it, like, I'd never seen something like that.
Mexican women or like Latinx families, we're not allowed to like have a choice of like having a child. If you're pregnant, you're pregnant, and that's like it.
You're having a baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's no choice.
I was just like, wow, she really like did that. She was able to say she didn't want to bear this child, and she's happy, like she was relieved she didn't. And it meant a lot in cinema to see a woman say that. Yes. And in just like in like Mexican cinema to say that.
And for her not to be dehumanized or demonized when she did that, you know what I mean? Like, she was still a relatable and beautiful human being. Everybody
and seen as a saint almost. I think she was like the saint for the family.
Right.
Yeah. She had just saved those kids, and she's
literally just didn't know how to swim, just walked into the ocean, saved some drowning ass children. That's amazing.
Yeah, definitely.
Sorry, spoilers for those.
Yeah,
who
super
seen
spoilers.
It.
On
super spoilers.
I feel like honestly,
I was like, if y'all haven't seen it now, it's like a month in. Two.
You should have
a month and
it.
A half in.
If you haven't watched it, we just probably look. You need to reevaluate.
It's been a solid.
Nick Lodis is trying to do a live projection in February, so.
I hope you guys can Dallas. Do that.
Let me know.
There's only one scene. So in those there, people that haven't seen
there's
it,
there's only one scene that I am concerned about, which we all know. I laughed. That was hilarious.
Oh,
that was so weird.
I was feeling the same way she was. She was like, "What the?"
I was like, this felt like a joke. I was like,
you know, the joke that I've been wanting to make ever since I saw that fucking movie and I got really fucking pissed at this man is Furman, more like Vermin, motherfucker. I hate this asshole.
I mean, I was really happy because I'm just annoyed with men like all 2018. So seeing like the men being like literally seen as pieces of shit this whole film, and like the women being the strong, powerful women that we are every day, was really, really, like, refreshing, because machismo's strong as fuck in the Mexican and Latinx community.
Oh my God.
Like, we're all having to do shit all the time because of the shit that they do. So seeing, like, the mom, like, as shitty as she was to Cleo, because she was.
Oh, she was shitty.
And so was the grandma. Like, they all held it down. Mm-hmm. When one way or another. I know Cleo, I think, obviously, like I said, is to me, like, the saint of the family. Like, she literally kept them going. Like, their mom, if she didn't have Cleo around, those kids probably would barely be making it.
I mean, I don't really care about the white women and what they did. Honestly, I wanted less of the white people in general. But fine, they had to be in it because it's about his life. But I don't know. Like, I only was interested in, like, her struggle and her I don't know. I feel like a lot of people said that, like, what he did was political, and he was, like, you know, by making the men all trash. But it's, like you said, that machismo thing is super real. And I think from an outsider's perspective, from someone who doesn't understand Mexican machismo or Mexico, mm-hmm. the way it works, not just, you know, the way men are trash, but the way everything was happening. I think they're called puristas. Like, they used to go and fight the students. And I think that would go over a lot of people's heads. Not that he wasn't just trash, but that he was like, there is a segment of society that was doing that. Mm-hmm. They were fighting their own people for money. And I think, I thought what he did was masterful with that, because I feel like her life, just literally being poor in Mexico and brown and indigenous, I think you can hit on a lot of things that most people ignore in Mexican society. Machismo, the fucking politics, the violence of being a woman, an indigenous woman, like you said. Like, also, fuck those white women forever. I fucking hate them. Like, honestly, like, I was so fucking annoyed by them. Because, again, my mother does the same thing, so it's like, I fucking hate them. Not the people in general, just...
That scene with that lady, like, literally when there was a fucking hot fire on New Year's Eve, like, I was like, the classism, she's literally drinking champagne while everybody is setting that fire, like, getting the buckets of water, like, including the kids.
And then that dude, the fucking dude that started singing, I was like, what the white bullshit is this? Nobody needs a singer right now.
That's exactly how I felt the entire time. I was just like,
and that whole scene made me so uncomfortable. I was just like,
dude, but what was funny is that the dude's wearing like the most flammable suit in the whole fucking world too.
I wanted him to catch fire.
Because he was that fucking like bear thing or whatever he was.
Yeah. That was like, I wrote it in my notes, I put peak white. That was peak white.
Yeah, that whole scene like made me so uncomfortable because they're like speaking perfect English. They were
shooting
like,
guns.
Shooting guns for no reason.
On stolen land.
Yes. And they're just like, ugh, God. Hi, we're just here, like, living our life. Meanwhile, like, Cleo's there with the other, like,
pregnant
nannies,
as fuck.
Mm-hmm, having to take care and watch the kids. While that kid, like, wasn't there, like, a kid that was, like, running near the guns and stuff? And they were, like, all, like.
They're like, how about don't die, you know? God, it was ridiculous,
it was, like,
dude.
Peak white shit right there. But it was, like, you could fucking compare it to the very beautiful scene in which she's talking about, this looks like my country, this looks like where I'm from, where she's out in the field and you can hear everything. You hear,
I mean, it's still like colonization because the fucking forest was still burned down at the end of it.
Facts, but they were burning it down as the kind of like fuck you to the people that took the land, because in the background of all of that, they're talking about they were taking land from the indigenous people where they're around. So I don't think that fire...
They're still there, like,
that was set on purpose as a big fuck you to them and their white privilege. Mm-hmm. And shout out to that. Burn that shit down. Fuck them. So
see, I didn't even see it that way. That's why I was like, what? I thought it was...
It's all very Alfonso Cuarón. Mm-hmm. Like, he puts things in these layers. You know what I mean? He does that in Y Tu Mamá También. The thing that I like about Y Tu Mamá También versus Roma, you know how in Y Tu Mamá También it's about mostly privileged men traveling around and doing all kinds of privileged shit, and in the background there's the politics,
human people,
and there's the indigenous poor, like lower class,
the people that are.
And this one, it's pretty much backwards. It's like you're following Yalitza's story, and in the background you see the political and the upper class. He literally flipped the roles from Y Tu Mamá También, and I thought that was like. Like him come, you know, that was progress for him, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and I guess go down to like my like whole thesis on it. Not my thesis, my fucking, what is it?
Theories.
My whole fucking theory on it is that like every single movie he's made has been about her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you can see it in Roma when you watch it. You see Children of Men was about a black woman giving birth to the only child on earth, and it's also
an immigrant
girl,
which was the biggest
an
part of
immigrant,
it.
A black woman, and a there's so many things going on in Children of Men, we'll get to that. And I felt like that was him taking Cleo's story.
Well, Gravity's story. Even still like a rebirth for a woman. That's why I love that film. Yes. Because it's not even like, yes, it's space, but it's not really about space. It's about a woman like having a rebirth from losing a child. And it's almost like a reawakening.
A woman who lost a child.
Yeah, so she has like a whole reawakening and like finding herself again because she realizes she didn't need anyone. It was a battle within herself to overcome and win and see like adversity. Like she literally had a rebirth coming out of the water, like almost like a baptism. As much as I don't want to say that because I don't follow religion, like that's what you see it as. And it's beautiful for that exact reason that they did that. And I was just like, wow.
But see, that even then, we're still going back to Libo, a woman who right. lost their child. Mm-hmm. And not just that, like, in Roma, they go watch a space movie.
Yeah.
And that's his memory
George
of her.
Clooney. I thought that was George Clooney for a second. You probably heard me scream in the theater because I was like, what?
Yeah, I think that was you. That was funny.
I was literally the only person reacting because I was freaking out.
That's another thing. Like, that's a memory he has with her. They went to the movies to see that space movie together. Mm-hmm. He makes Gravity. He makes Children of Men. He makes fucking Y Tu Mamá También. She's literally in the movie. They go to the beach. Same beach where he went as a child. Mm-hmm. Main character. Same thing. So I'm just like, oh my god, literally everything you've made has been about this woman and your love for her.
He's got like all the elements of an auteur, you know what I mean? He's got regular people that uses his the cinematographer that he used, Emmanuel Lubezki.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he did work on this movie.
So he was actually set for pre-production. They had scheduled it and they talked about it because he's used him in all his films. That's his best friend, pretty mm-hmm. much. Like, if you don't see their names together, like, you're like, what?
That's weird, yeah.
So he was supposed to do it. They had scheduled everything for pre-production, but Chivo was already scheduled to do another film. So he had a certain timeline that he could work with Cuarón, and he kept mentioning to him, I only have this much time to, like, work on it.
But it took Cuarón 110 days to do this shit. Like,
so yeah, he kept pushing it back, and because he kept pushing it back, Emmanuel couldn't do it anymore. Like, he was like, I'm sorry, this just can't happen. So he's like, oh shit, I guess I'm doing this. So that's why he became the DP.
Wild.
So he did it, and that's why they were even joking. Inarito in that interview told him, he was like, okay, so I'm gonna hit you up to be DP in my next film, right? But yeah, he didn't even have Guillermo del Toro or Inarito look at the film, any of it. Typically he would share the clips in the film with them, and he didn't want them to, because he didn't want them to change up anything, because mm-hmm. he wanted it to be as real to his actual story.
He was very, very adamant about that. Mm-hmm. I like that shit. I like how natural he was towards this entire film. Like, not sharing it with your creative partners, that shit's unheard of. That's like, you have to be in a fucking place of fucking power for that. Like, it's wild to me. But
that's why I think all the films that he made led up to this moment, and I think from here on out, like, the rest of his films are gonna essentially be like exactly what he wants, because this was where we were supposed to be,
right?
Yeah. But I feel like because of those movies we have this, because mm-hmm. he was able to learn and grow. We've got this, which I think mm-hmm. is honestly his masterpiece. People feel differently about it. They can come fight me. That's fine.
Same. We'd fight them together.
We can square up. Like,
we'll be the two right there.
And you know, it's usually white men or like people who are disconnected or don't know anything about Mexico.
I mean, I even let's just be say men, because I've had brown like Chicano film dudes try and
I've had brown
square
Chicana,
up with me.
There's been brown Chicana film nerdy girls that are really like, don't rat me, but Children of Men is still better. And I was
fuck
like, honey,
you.
You're Chicana.
Fuck you.
No, because even like, so I watched Children of Men again.
She's
like
fifth generation Texan. She don't count.
Okay, because yeah, I was like, I watched Children of Men like before I saw Roma, and I finished it again like after Roma, and I was still just like, this is still like peak white, like, are the powerful people.
Yeah.
Like, essentially. Yeah.
That was more
like
of
it was
a,
still yeah it was still
in, more of a Y Tu Mamá También, like,
it was,
you know,
still white guys saving
people.
The day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like he literally gave his life for her.
Yeah,
but and I was speaking on that
white savior, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
speaking on that, did you guys notice parallels between Cleo and the main character in Children of Men? I don't remember that guy's name.
Wait, the
Clive
main
Owens
character?
Yeah,
Clive
the
Owens
two
character?
Main characters.
And who?
The main character in Roma, the main character in Children of Men.
So you think Cleo and
I think Cleo had more in common with the black immigrant woman who's mm-hmm.
in her story? Yes, but I guess I mean more like the way that she's portrayed in the film. Like, and by portrayed, I literally mean visually. They have very similar ways of being portrayed. Like, they don't talk quite that much. You see their turmoil. Like,
but he was also still very selfish. And she wasn't. She still, like, gave everything for her family.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I say, like, just the way that they were shot.
Mm. Okay. Mm. Yeah, because I was like, he, like, didn't even want to help her.
No, they were completely different people. But still, like, I feel like he approached them similarly. Like, how he told their stories, he approached similarly. I'm not explaining that very well, I guess.
I know, I'm like trying to think about it. I'm
trying
like,
to think about it.
I watched
I'm
them
like,
one after the other. So
okay.
like
oh, okay,
the
no,
way
I
that I viewed these. Them, like I would look at the way that he would shoot the person, and like the way that I would track the main character in Children of Men felt exactly the same when I watched Roma. I was like tracking her. You know what I mean? I think that I really
oh,
had...
yeah, like DP stuff, like cinematography kind of stuff.
That's why I said like the way
no,
that it's
yeah.
shot.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean yes.
it was weird to connect those two characters, but like I saw them so similarly because I watched those two movies back to back.
Okay. No, I mean, I see what you mean, the way like physically shot. Yes.
Yeah, that sounds like, wait, personality physically, and
just the way like that they were like shown, just exposed as mm-hmm. characters, like they just seem really similar to me because like you catch them in the middle of like their lives. Their lives are already going, and then they get taken around to different places. Like it's just the way that the whole story went, like not the content, but the way that it, like you watch it, it feels like the same shit. Not in a bad way, obviously. I feel like I have a better argument for it, but I don't have time now, so
I'm sorry. I'm like trying to think about it, and I'm like I think it's still because it like to me it's still the fact that he was like really selfish for most of the film. I'm not looking at the shots right now because I'm just like, he was kind of like, even because of that lady, you end up finding out is his like ex-partner, ex-wife, and they had a child together.
Julianne Moore. Mm-hmm. Yeah, her name is still Julian.
Just Julian. Yeah, made it like a masculine name for some reason.
I was into that, but and they also lost a child. There's a lot of it's his running theme, you know. And that's, I mean, he grew up with that. I'm just saying, like,
well, didn't. No, or no, what? The lady from Mi Tu Mamá También, but she couldn't have kids or she couldn't get pregnant.
She couldn't get pregnant.
That's what it was. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, she was super sad about that. So, no, I just honestly, I made me love him when I watched Roma. I was like, oh, he loves her. Like, he really loves this woman. And it very is complicated in a way that it's being shown, the reality of a complicated ass Mexico. He just really, really loves this woman. So, I was really into that. And then the woman he loves is a brown woman who looks like my abuela. So shout out to that. And shout out to centering, you know, mujeres oaxaqueñas. What did I just say? I apologize. I'm not going to
try oaxaqueñas. Oaxaqueñas.
Okay, I'm thinking of like...
Hi, welcome to Library Bay's Spanish class.
I'm just kidding. Thank you, Library Bay. I'll be taking your class next week. The music was fucking amazing, okay?
Did y'all read that story Richard wrote from Songmas on the whole film? Like the score and the music?
Yes, he said that like it was... Well, no, I read a bunch of them.
So. Oh, okay. Like he interviewed the woman that was... I can't remember her name right now, but he interviewed the woman that helped with Alfonso Cuarón finding, like, they literally researched and found like the music that was on commercials, found the music, everything that was happening, like every like little sound, like this was the first one that didn't have like its own score. Yeah. He did all that like natural sound and like all music that was played during that time period. So he literally had to go back and like find archival like clips of things to find what was playing at that time period to match it because he wanted it that significant.
Everything in the radio, anything that's overheard while they're going through the street, that's fucking amazing.
It's difficult either. Too.
Yeah, so she was like saying the amount of time that she took looking into it and like finding it, and I was just like, wow, I like low-key want that job though.
Yeah.
Guys, pets.
Doing research jobs like that. Like I don't do, obviously I don't work on big productions or anything like that, but doing little research things like that on like on sets and really in music or whatever the fuck, like it's really weird. Because they're just like, tell me everything about this one really random thing, and I'm just like, okay, here you go, information. It's actually pretty fun.
Yeah.
No, I loved it. I fucking love this movie. I can't.
Do you guys want to get into Children of Men?
Oof. There's so many things there. So many. It's like...
I mean, okay. Is it weird? Like, okay, so I was really obsessed with that movie when it first came out because it came out in, like, what, 2007? No?
2003.
2003?
I think so.
I thought it was 4.
2003. It came out, like, the senior year of love, actually.
Because the first time I watched it was in 2007. And, like, I loved that movie. And for a long time, I held it as, like, one of my favorite films of all time. And now watching it recently, I was just, like, literally the white people are doing everything. And they still made.
Sorry, 2006.
Okay. Oh, see, I was a year off. I knew it was, like, near my graduation time period. Mm-hmm. Calling my age out. Anyways. watching it now is just kind of weird because, what's his face?
Clive Owen.
Well, not Clive Owen, but the guy that was on, damn it,
Charlie Hunnam.
No,
white guy with glasses.
The black actor. He was like being bad.
Yeah, him.
And like literally, almost besides like the refugee, like pregnant woman, like the POCs were either seen as like, obviously because they're refugees, were seen like really poor and unhealthy and like sick and like almost like they were scared of them, or they were still like villains. So, like, all the white people were still the saviors, essentially. But, like, because even, like it was Clive Owen and then it was that woman.
Julianne Moore.
Well, not Julianne Moore, the white lady with the dreads.
The other one.
Oh. The white lady with dreads.
Which is already a thing. They were all, like, still considered, like, the rescuers for this black woman. So that's why, to me, it was still kind of, now I'm like, oh. So that's why I would see Roma as, like, my favorite now, because it's the indigenous woman is the one saving everyone.
Well, yeah. Let's talk a little bit about Children of Men and what the general concept is. This is, like, this is a dystopia. This is, like, a super, like... Like, I guess the exaggeration of what could happen.
It's like 2020-something or...
2022, maybe.
Something 2027.
Okay.
So, like, yeah, so it's a dystopic future where...
there are no longer children.
Well, yeah, the women have become unfertile for, like, 18 years now, mm-hmm. and the youngest person ever is 18.
And they died.
And he dies. Yeah, and it's a big deal. He's almost like a celebrity. Mm-hmm. Like, the new celebrity is, like, who's the youngest person? Because everybody's in their mind. Like, a whole generation has been wiped out, and probably, like, this is the end of humanity. And still, even despite all of these facts that all of humanity is probably going to end, the xenophobia is at an all-time high. You know, like, people want immigrants to be exiled and all this horrible shit.
All immigrants are illegal. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There is no such thing as, like, there's no legal migration is, like, that's out the window.
But, yeah, there's,
and even the there's no, like, no refuge for the refugees. Like, they're just treat like literally in a wired cage jail.
And I feel like I feel the same way. Like, it's white savory, but I feel like it's seen a lot. Besides the main characters, like, again, like, every Alfonso Cuarón movie, like, you're always, he's showing you what's in front of you, but if you ignore that and pay attention to the background, you're literally seeing what's actually happening. There's this scene where they're taking the young woman, Key? They're taking Key into the actual refugee camp,
mm-hmm.
and they're showing people in cages, they're showing people blindfolded, they're waterboarding some people, and all of the cops, it's like this kind of like a flashback to, like, Guantanamo Bay. It's a flashback to, it's not even a flashback, it's like current day, present day children in cages.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I feel like he's pretty spot on in what xenophobia does, and I feel like that's actually super relevant to today. It's never going to stop being relevant as far as I'm concerned, and I think that's where his genius comes in. But you're right. I don't give a fuck about white people saving people. The refugees are all seen as evil and, like, a terrorist organization,
mm-hmm.
and the way that the government's... There's a lot happening in Children of Men that I can't even begin to sum up in maybe an hour. Because it's not just, like, 1984. It's 1984 in North Korea currently. It's Russia. It's China. It's every...
It's, like, America. South Texas. No,
I was about to say that.
South Texas, Southern California.
It's people are in cages. Children are in cages. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Just, like, this is... Mm-hmm. And this is, like, 11 years after this movie came out, you know? And it's technically 9 years away from that date. So it's actually eerily, like, accurate.
And I mean, and I think that's where that's his genius. Like, he's telling us, and the way that it was received, everybody fucking hated this movie and nobody watched it. It was seen as a failure for him, and he didn't know how he was gonna get back. But I think anyone that knows anything watched this movie, understood it, and saw where the fuck we're headed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's his genius in that he's showing what imperialistic societies, tyrannical, totalitarian governments actually do, and mm-hmm. what it means versus when you're white, rich, and you have a fucking Picasso
hanging
in your dining mm-hmm. room, while you have just modern art all over your fucking fancy-ass house for no reason. The class divide there is astronomical. It's the way it is now, though. Like, fucking Jay-Z...
has a song about Picasso paintings.
Has a song about him just collecting Picasso just cause. It's fucking mm-hmm. just cause. And if that doesn't fucking gross you out, I don't know where the fuck we're heading. And I think that's his genius. I think he's able to acknowledge his privilege and also work within his privilege to try to tell bigger stories besides himself. Like, yes, he acknowledges his privilege. Yes, he's a white man making movies. And of course, he's not my favorite director ever. I've already interviewed her. I've already spoken with her. But fucking
shout out Mosquita.
Shout out Mosquita.
That movie was beautiful. So thank you for introducing me to it.
You're welcome.
off topic. Sorry.
No, never off topic.
Fanning out on CYC.
Totally allowed. But yeah, and I think I don't know. Like, I agree with you. Yes, white people, but.
But obviously, it's still, like, a very important film. I know. That's why it was weird seeing it now, like, 10 years later, over 10 years later, and being like, well, this is actually happening in our country, essentially.
It was also, like, weird for me to see it, because so many people were like, watch this movie, it's great. And, like, they hyped it up, and especially white people hype it up. But I didn't like it that much, and I just watched it for the first time 2 weeks ago or so, and I was just like, I don't give a fuck about this main character.
I think
don't
Emma felt the same way.
Half of a shit about this main character.
Oh, Clive? Uh-huh. Yeah, I didn't care about him. He was the best.
Right, it wasn't until he came into the picture that I even wanted to look at the fucking screen, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think maybe if I had seen it 10 years ago, then I would feel differently, but right now, I, you know, especially with the kind of work that me and you try to get on this podcast, I was just like, this is shit. Like, you know, Alfonso Cuarón could do better. And then I watched Roma, and he did. So, bam.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying. It was like a step way to help him get to Roma, where he is now.
Yeah, he had to make these movies about white people. So
you have to realize that he had to invert the thing. It was always people of color in the background, the lower class in the background, and he finally flipped it. Like,
I think it was like two things. So I think we're also not like. I think you're giving him too much credit and his ability to create, because I think in the beginning he was creating things that studios were saying,
okay, a little princess.
Yeah, we're like, hey, we'll let you make this. But I don't think he had as much creative control as he does now, and I don't think he would have been ready to have made a Roma starting off. I think he always wanted to make this movie, but he wasn't able to. Mm-hmm. I think he was always stopped, and then Children of Men tanked, so they didn't want to give him any fucking money. The only reason he did, Prisoner of Azkaban is because he was connected, because mm-hmm. Guillermo, and that's why he got to do that. And then he fucking blew everyone out the water in Gravity, because again, centering a white woman, which is everyone's okay with. Mm-hmm. Again, he's placating these people in these fucking studios, and now that he's made it, he can say, fuck y'all, I'm gonna center a brown indigenous woman. Like, suck my dick from the back. Like, shout out to that. Shout out to
Issa Merrill. And I don't think that has to
I know, it's just like, wait, what?
Yeah, I just said that.
Yeah, which was less about creative ability and more about the power he had in filmmaking, period. Yeah, has to do with, and I know that mostly he wanted it to be really accessible, and that's why Netflix was a big part of this, but I think it's also like he knew this is a foreign film, it's in black and white, and it's personal, and I'm not giving into the studios. That's another reason that he went to Netflix. That was another big factor.
That's the fucking future, honestly. That is the future. Netflix is the future. Like, make it accessible to all people. Don't be a douchebag about it. And that's another thing that I'm seeing his development, his growth.
Or most people, by the way. It was a conversation we had earlier. True. Most people. Not everybody.
And what I find interesting about him is that he's found a way.
Not even most people. A lot of people. Sorry. Yeah. Not even most.
And what he's doing is, I think, is interesting as a white privileged dude who just happens to speak Spanish and be from Mexico. Facts. These are facts.
I know. That's why I laugh.
But still, because it's such a concept to people, like, yes, white people are also Latinos and Mexicans.
That's why I'm like, I get happy when they win Oscars, him and Guillermo del Toro, but I'm like, they're still white Mexican.
They're white dudes.
White men.
They're still men. Dudes. They're still straight.
They're still white.
Mm-hmm. They're as privileged as they can get within their country.
I just think, I just like to cling on to them because of the fact that we don't have anybody.
It's facts.
But it's hopefully opening doors for everybody else.
Exactly. But what I see he's doing now is he's decentering his ego, and I feel like, not just on a director white man thing, I feel like as humans he's decentered his own ego and made it about other people. Maybe he's reached a platform he can finally go, this is for other people now. I've done it for me long enough. I'm decentering myself. I'm making it about something else. Boom, here we go. And I just think that's beautiful, and I think he doesn't get enough credit for that. And he's still a white dude, but
it's an interesting way to look at it, because for me, I looked at it backwards. I thought like he was finally able to completely center a story about his life instead of slipping it into other stories. It was finally a story about his life. So even though he wasn't the main character, like I thought it was more like he was getting more personal instead of less.
No, but that's the thing, like he made it personal, but he decentered his ego from
because
it.
Pepe is supposed to be him.
The
I
youngest
think.
Child is him, but he's still. That's what I'm saying. Like, it was a personal story, but what I mean by decentering the ego is that he didn't make it about him. Like, even though it's a very personal film, it's about someone who he loves versus his love for himself, mm-hmm. which is more like Y Tu Mamá También, is probably his love for himself, right? and love for his country or whatever. But I feel like this time, I feel like every story has been extremely personal to him. But this one was the one that he was like, you know what? I'm going to make it about the person who I seem to be just talking about in every single movie I've ever done. Let me decenter myself. Let me explore that. Because he's like, I obviously love her. Let me see what that is. And that's what I mean by decentering his ego. That's all. Because obviously, everyone's fucking selfish, and especially filmmakers are obsessed with themselves. Every story they make is probably their life. But that was interesting to me. He decentered himself from his own story. I like that.
Even though, like, on all his movies, especially in Ni Tu Mamá También, he's always, like, I think he's always kind of prided himself in putting these really interesting things in the background. And he put himself in that background, therefore making himself the interesting thing. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm like, feels more ego to me, but, you know, people just interpret things differently.
These are facts, yeah. I saw it differently, because I was like, look, she's in the forefront. She's literally in all the scenes. Like, I love her. She's beautiful. And
she's definitely what is capturing everybody's attention mm-hmm. in the world. And I hope that she really makes change for actors all around.
Oh my god, did you see her fucking Vogue shoot?
Yeah, we posted it.
Beautiful.
CYC podcast on Instagram.
Crying.
I'm talking more to the people listening.
And I'm plugging our Instagram.
I was like, if somebody can find that, like, Vogue Mexico. I literally was looking for
a hard copy?
Yeah, I wanted a physical copy so I can, like, hold it close to my heart. And I was trying to find it. My friend and I were looking on eBay, and it was, like, $50 for an issue.
Worth it.
Worth it.
So honestly, I was like, am I about to spend this coin? Because it even said, like, shipping wasn't even included in that. And I was I was like, am I going to do this?
God damn.
Maybe.
But, yeah.
Maybe they'll, like, reissue it.
I was like, I'm about to call the local bookstores to get international magazines, see if they got them.
Fuck yeah. So honestly, there's no debate between children and men in Roma, y'all. So if you feel a way, you're probably a white man, you need to check your privilege. Or if not, then you're probably buying into the white man's idea and been brainwashed to think that's what you're supposed to think.
No matter what, you're wrong.
You're wrong. Either way. And we can say that because we spent a lot of fucking time trying to record this, so fuck y'all.
Goddamn.
I feel very strongly about this.
Goddamn. Do you guys want to give ratings?
Yes.
For these movies,
I mean, cafecitos and pan.
No cafecitos for Roma.
Yeah,
I know.
I think it's pretty obvious how we feel about Roma. Like, we don't have to fucking say it.
Yeah, but five pan dulces.
Five pan dulces.
No cafecitos. Yeah.
Can I say marranitos? Because
those are your favorite pan dulces.
Those are my favorite. Well. Yeah. Those are great. I mean, I know that colores. We talk about conchas, but marranitos all day.
I like empanadas personally, but only my tía's empanadas from Durango that she makes outside in the ovens. No one else can touch them. I will never, ever.
I like the Colombiano empanadas that have, like, meat and papa.
I haven't had, like, an authentic one for me to say.
They're good.
Like,
they're
those are my faves.
Yeah.
So, yeah, mine are the five marranitos.
What about children of men?
Probably in, like, 2007, I probably would have gave it five pan dulces. So, watching it now, I probably give it, like, 3.5.
Yeah, I give it a full cafecito, like a full fucking one, and that's just because the second half of it kept me awake more.
I would still give it a pretty high rating just because I'm into sci-fi. Like, I like dystopian, creepy ass features.
Same.
That are probably
yeah, I was gonna say
to
it's
happen.
Not sci-fi.
I think the only
like
reason I feel differently is now because of the way I've, like, raised myself to see things in film. I was just kind of annoyed that it was, like, still, like, men and white men paving the way and, like, running everything.
Children,
and, like, I know
men.
Obviously, like, it would be some work before, like, women are doing it in film, at least, because I know we all see that already and we want that. I think I was just still annoyed with that happening. So
yeah, I guess maybe I'd give it, like, a 4 bandulces, just because I guess the way I see movies is different from the way I used to, because I tend to, like, ignore the white men and what they do. I forget their names.
Yeah, I think it's like Benchoff, UNT media arts classes that corrupted my brain, that I was like
corrupted, more like fixed it.
Well, like, I'm saying, like, corrupted in the sense that, like, all that I had previous, like, cinephile knowledge, like, was erased, because then I took his class and I was like, holy shit,
it changes everything.
All these directors and people I've held up high are pieces of shit. And
shout out to me for already knowing that and not taking that class.
That's I was like, I watched, because Eva had always talked to me about the class, so then actually, like, having a platform in that class, like, because I feel like the professor gave me that ability, because a lot of the kids that I was with, because I went to school later in life, they were all like 18, 19, and they were all like, Quentin Tarantino is my favorite director, and blah, blah, blah. And I was in that class, and the professor would let me go off and like tell these kids not be like, this isn't
acceptable. This ain't it, chief.
Wow.
Yo, but the thing is that like a lot of the students, especially that went to that class, you know, they didn't spend all that time like going in, like you went into political science and then you were really into film, so those things intersected naturally for you. But for me, a person that gave zero shits back in the day about politics, he brought all of it in. Feminism, like race, so it was stuff, like
gender, sexuality.
It was a political class slash films
like
class.
He'll but never call it
politics
that.
And literally everything, so that's why
life is politics. Yeah. But he made it like so much more apparent, and he like broke it down to like these pieces and literally like built you back up. Like he broke cinema and then built it back up for you.
Like I literally wrote a paper on Mad Max Fury Road.
I wrote a paper on Thelma and Louise and Brokeback Mountain.
Oh, and I did Force Awakens too, because of Rey.
And it was just like, it was just quite an experience. But for people that didn't go into political science, like literally I became politically aware in a film class.
That's interesting.
Like I was like aware by the time I took that class with things, but then like taking that in a class where I was like, wow, I've held like certain people and like these things up for high for so long, and seeing like the reality of like the industry and how things have been made me change my views on a lot.
Shout out to that class. Good for
that
y'all.
Professor is just absolutely amazing. Yeah, shout out to some white gays are cool.
Yeah, because he actually would like made sure like women and POCs had the first way of talking in that class. Like I'm not even kidding. Like every time somebody like a white like little boy would try to go off, and I'm gonna say little boy because they are little boys.
Oh yeah, white little boys children. Would often be like, no in offense, that film, but here's a really offensive thing that I'm gonna say.
Yeah, and then God. I would be like, and he'd be like, here, please, go ahead, please speak on this. Me. And then I would just go off, and literally one time I was applauded, and I was like, thank you.
That's interesting. I like that, like, people can both learn in class, and people can just learn in life, because you learn something either way. Like, you guys took a film class, learned about politics. I just watch a lot of fucking nerdy movies and knew about politics, and that intersected for me, that intersected for y'all. So there's all types of mediums. There's all types of forms to learn. If you're looking, it's there.
Yeah. Because, like, I still was doing stuff then. Mm-hmm. Like, it was aware of stuff because that was, like, 2015. So everything started happening in Ferguson. And I know Eva and I, like, went, marched, like, for a Black Lives Matter march in Dallas. So, like, I was aware of what was going on in the world. But obviously that class, like, just gave me a different view on media.
There's all types of way to do it. You don't have to go to college, guys. You can just start doing it.
Come to your local library and you can find all that stuff.
Just read books that aren't by white men and you'll be fine out here. And that's the reality.
Even fucking podcasts, man. They'll like school the shit out of you.
Never listen to fucking white men unless
learn so much shit like when I white through women, podcasting, dude. Like so much shit.
I'm guilty of listening to my fave white women's.
The only white podcasts that I listen to are about screenwriting. But that's kind of a problem within Hollywood itself, where screenwriting is
dominated by white men.
It's they're the ones who have been allowed to thrive, and only now am I starting to hear women of color on these podcasts. Like I go into the archives, and it's all white men, and every now and then like a white woman.
This is a step in the right direction for the way Roma is and the way it's being shown to the world. So hopefully. Show your tías, your abuelas, your sexist-ass dads, your sexist-ass tíos, your munchista-ass brother. Show everybody and they mama and your grandma and your tía.
Your primas that have indigenous people helping them clean their house. Because I know me and Eva like literally want to hit up our cousin, and I'm going to hit her up on WhatsApp and be like,
I want to like,
please watch
Roma. I want to like mail the Vogue from Mexico to my like fucking white ass cousin who was talking shit about she said Indias, and I was like, I'm gonna fight you, bitch. I basically did tell her that I want to fucking frame it, dude. And send it to her and be like, put this on your wall, bitch, and suck my dick from the back. Like, there's a lot of like colorism in my family because they're all white in Mexico, and I'm white too.
Well, see, that's why I was like, I was thrown off because growing up here, all my family and relatives are all brown, with the exception of my dad. He's white passing, but. Everyone, all my dad's like family over there,
white passing.
Most of them are white passing. Yeah, I was like when Eva and I first went there. Like obviously, like y'all know how it is when you go visit your family there. You're like super stoked because you're like, wow, I'm seeing like my family, like, where we, my dad and my, like, parents grew up and all this stuff. And then, like, me and Eva got there and we're like, whoa.
What's happening?
Our cousins are, like, white passing and, like, want to have hair that is blonde. And they have an indigenous woman cleaning their house and they talk to her like this. Wait, what? God. So it was just, like, that's what me and Eva, when we walked out of Roma, we're like, shit, that hit a lot of feelings for a lot of different reasons. Like, everything, like, touched a point with how we felt. And we were both like, we need to talk to our cousin and make sure she watches this movie. Like,
yo, that my white-ass family, and my family, especially my mom's side, are white as balls. The one thing that they haven't done is had help. You know what I mean? Like, they haven't had people clean their houses and stuff. Like, they've always kind of done that on their own. But I think that has more to do with the fact that, like, we weren't... They're white Latinos, but they're not rich white Latinos.
They're on in the rancho, right?
Some of them are in the city too, but like, they just, that's the one thing that we've never been like, yes, we're white. Like, they're very like, whatever, they still have like very colorist value, like colorism filled values, but they can never really presumir a little too much, because like, they're not doing that unless you're here in Estados Unidos. And even here, they don't have help like that, which I'm like, okay, like they learned something from coming up here. You know,
they're so. Not. They're at least not. They know. Classes, but they're still colors.
Yeah,
they're still colorists. They're not classes.
They have, and I would say, yeah, the colorism. You know, it's like internalized in most people, so it's not really that surprising. But yeah, that's the one thing. I'm like, okay, at least they clean their own fucking houses. So shout out to my family for doing the bare minimum.
Raise your own kids. Wow.
The bare minimum.
Shout out to that.
Good shit. Yeah.
No, we have to acknowledge our own privileges, and I acknowledge my privilege my fucking pale-ass privilege that I've never had in my life before until now. It's like I'm a fucking Power Ranger, like I changed color. I don't understand. I'm pissed. I have to show y'all when I was dark and beautiful.
No, you've told me before. I used to be brown and beautiful. Like, the weather does affect, like, I mean,
I'm
I feel
a,
like
yeah,
I
I'm
get
at
a
my
little
palest
lighter.
In the winter, so, like, yeah, I'm kind of there right now.
I'm pale all the time now. I don't know. I fucking changed. Like, I'm pissed. But now I have to acknowledge me and Maita's white
I know,
privilege.
You, like, would attack me all the time, which is, like,
no,
it's
didn't.
Valid.
I was just trying to, like, make a joke, but because the reality is we're, like, not
at one point, I started,
apart.
Like, looking at us, and I was like, she talks a lot about like,
I'm just talking
me,
shit,
but never talks about
yeah.
her. Maybe I should start...
No, I have to show
some.
You pictures so you can understand why it took me a very long time to realize I'm white now. So it
all
is
right,
what
so
it
then
is.
I mean, we're all privileged at some
we're
point. And we're all aware of it, so, like...
Yeah. Gross.
It's weird acknowledging my privilege in the spaces that I like to be in. You know, I like to be in, you know, around Latinos and people
POC.
Of color and queer people.
POC.
Like, this is where I'm comfortable, this is where I'm happy, and this is where I happen to hold a lot of privilege. And then going to very privileged spaces, like at my job, where they're all white and straight and have money, and then being like having to call them out on their shit while at the same time, and then they get mad. They're like, "Why are you calling me on this privilege?" I'm like, "I call myself out on privilege. I can do this. Like, I do this to myself all the time. You can do this to
You're
yourself.
Like, I can do it to white people, and that's it. And that's who I do it to. Same. I can do it to white
people.
That's
not the only people.
I mean,
like,
I still call out. I call out a lot of people all the time.
I do it to straight people too.
No, I mean, you know,
and to men.
Yes.
There's a number
I'll call
of people
out
like
straight
that.
Women.
Like, there's so many people to call out, and I do it on a regular fucking. I'm not fun at family parties. Just know this.
Me and my uncle got drunk together the other night, and I was calling him out on his machismo bullshit, and he was like talking about he was like Central Americans, and I had to call him out on his bullshit. Like, we were drunk. I fucking still did it. Like, you can do it, guys.
Yeah, I call out my dad on his shit. I'm like. Say that again, brown, indigenous-looking man. Say it again, my man, with your curly hair and your big lips and your wide nose. Let's say it again one more time. So, yes.
So I hope you guys had a good holidays doing that, calling out your family, because I think that's what we're about to be
doing. Or taking
breaks
from your family, because, like...
Because they're problematic-ass white people.
Us Capricorn Taurus moons... We gotta take care of ourselves.
We do.
This
we have
time.
To take care. We are thriving.
And I'm really happy that like when I saw Fry Papita after like a little while, she was like, "How are you doing? I know this is a really hard time for you." And I was like, "Thank you so much," because yeah,
Same.
We both hold in our feelings.
We're emotionally repressed 24/7.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to get my real feelings ever.
Like, so she's like, no, how are you really doing? And I was like, do you have like 15 minutes?
I have 5 hours. Let's go, girl. But yeah.
Because so, we're like at a Luna show.
We're in the middle of a show talking about our feelings, but only to each other, though. We can't do this to other people. That's just weird. We're embarrassed by them.
We feel safe with each other.
We do. Yeah, it's okay.
Are y'all done? I can't. I don't like this. I need more attention than this.
Oh, yeah. She's a Leo. Oh, yeah. Back to you.
No, it's okay. I think Pat opens up to me a little bit.
I do. I mean, mm-hmm. I open up to both of y'all a lot. That's why I'm like, I feel so connected with the show, not only because y'all are my friends, but, like, I literally love this show so much, and I've watched and been exposed to so much, and I feel like I'm learning from my friends all the time, and I'm just like, I'm so proud of y'all. And I don't know how many people I've literally made sure that they subscribe every time I'm at a meeting at work. And I'm like,
wild.
I'm not even kidding. And I've, like, given them cabronas y chingonas stickers, and I'm like,
if you want more.
I still have some from the Latino Pride.
Okay, good.
But yeah, I'm always promoting and hyping y'all up, so.
Yo, I don't even know what to say to that. I'm a little speechless right now.
I'm super happy. Thank you.
Yeah,
Do y'all know how excited I get to talk to y'all about, like, queer films, comic books, TV shows, like, everything? Like, I feel like when I see y'all, I word vomit because I'm literally excited to talk about stuff. Like, what was it yesterday I talked to you about?
Right, you're like, oh, are you done with Runaways yet? I was like I'm trying like I've been watching Runaways so
Spider-Verse slowly. Like,
oh, gotta watch that.
Oh my god, like I literally had given up on my like love for Spider-Man and like superhero films. Like Black Panther was the only thing I was looking forward to, and like Thor Ragnarok because of Valkyrie.
I was looking forward to Aquaman, I'm not gonna lie.
Really? Mm-hmm. See, I don't think I've been excited about a DC film since
Wonder Woman.
I wasn't even really excited about Wonder Woman.
I was really excited
about Wonder Woman. I went to watch it because my mom, that was like one of the TV shows she first started learning English watching when she immigrated here. So I was like, I'm taking you to the movies to watch this. We're going to do this together. So like, it was still cute, but I was still pissed at the end that I was like, did they really have to make this a love story? Did they really have to make them, like, did the man really have to be, like, the love?
You're talking to the gayest people.
That's why I was just, like, so I was so pissed because I was, like, the Amazonian woman. Like, they were literally the best part of that whole film.
God, yes.
And then seeing him, it was like, I have to do this because I love him. And therefore, I was like, this is fucking, dude, it's been, I was like, what the fuck? I was like, when is this not happening in a superhero film? And that's why I was like, that's why I love Enter the Spider-Verse, because I was just like, he's literally talking in Spanish. I was like, wait, you're listening to hip-hop, speaking, like, you're talking to your mom in Spanish, and then there's, like, fucking reggaeton playing in the background. I was like, wait, what? My heart. So then everything about that was perfect. Like, after y'all both watch it, I'm going to probably check up on both of y'all and be like, okay, so how do you feel?
I'm going to try to watch it this week.
I'm trying to watch it tonight.
It really is the best thing ever.
Everybody go see it. I think it's probably going to still be in theaters. It's a pretty big film. So if it's still in theaters and you haven't seen it, go contribute. Good-ass movies. All of these movies that we've mentioned, go watch them. Probably the least, I would say, Children of Men. I would just say watch Children of Men if you're going to watch it at the same time as Roma.
I mean, you know, like, if you're putting things in a list, which we made by now, it's not that high on that list. Children of Men isn't that high, boo. Just watch it later.
I think I'd probably put... I'm not even thinking of my order. Dang.
Like dead last. It's literally like Roma, Y Tu Mamá También, and Spider-Verse, and then Y Tu Mamá También, and then Children of Men.
Gravity's
not even on my list. I'm sorry.
Why do
I'm
you sorry. Hate it?
I love Sandra Bullock, so she could walk down the too, street, but and that's my favorite movie.
Gravity, I hold up high.
Thank you.
I love that movie so much. I went to see it at IMAX.
Yep. The only way and
I went
that.
To go watch it in theaters, like in a regular theater, and I watched it in IMAX, and I was just like, sometimes I watch it and I still just get emotional because of the way that it meant to me when I watched it then, and because of what I see it as. Mm-hmm. And that's why it gets me. It's like the same thing with like Moonlight. Like, I watch certain movies because they just bring this part of me out that I'm just like,
I can't do Moonlight too many times in a year.
That's... literally watched Moonlight on the 4th of July.
I tried to watch
there was a party going on in my backyard. I was like, I'll see y'all later. I'm going to sleep. Oh, just kidding. I'm watching Moonlight in my room.
I have to, like, get drunk to watch it or something because I can't. It's, like,
it was
so
hard.
Emotional for me. It's, like, With Animals. It's, like, something that I don't ever stop thinking about
Rihanna. So y'all check up on me on like Thursday, see how I feel after watching it, because I'm finally gonna watch
it. You're gonna watch it on Thursday?
Or sometime this week before Thursday.
Okay.
Right, well, I'll hit you up, girl.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to know our feelings on it, we literally have a whole episode on
it. I know, that's why I was like, I waited. I haven't listened to it because I was like, I can't do it
yet. We fucking spoiled the shit out of it.
Yeah, so that's why I didn't do it. And that's the same thing with
movie comparison, so yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's why I didn't, because I've read the book already, and I remember you were like, because I called you after you went to the screen, and I was like, how was it? And you're like, I can't tell you that much, but... And I was like,
ugh. It was just so
beautiful.
And plus,
beautiful. We're Raul Castillo stans.
Yes, we are.
I don't know how I am, but I've always been.
Maybe. You, me, and Richard.
We have our own group chat for Raul Castillo. Anyways. Mm-hmm. Anyways, whatever.
On a whole other reasons.
Don't know how you jumped into that one.
Yeah,
I'm
sorry about that.
But
anyways, guys, it's been amazing. This is such a good vibe. I'm so happy.
I love y'all.
Pat's in front of me. Maitha's in the same room as me, breathing the same air. Like, this is wild.
We celebrated your birthday early, but this will be technically after your birthday, so...
After my birthday, but before
so happy
birthday.
Late birthday to these ladies.
Yay!
Yay!
We're gonna all dance together.
Cap season.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I can't wait till it ends. Anyways.
Yes. I mean, like, I'm not... I feel like I'm not a typical Cap... I don't know, maybe it's just...
Maybe it's our Taurus moon thing.
Because I don't like to brag too much heavily on, like, Capricorn, but I'm still just, like... I mean, she posted. But she's posted memes that I've been like, oh wait, you're right. You're right.
With all just about how terrible we are at feeling, it's just,
that's the reason
the
why.
Only thing that I'm like, oh, I can talk about this because everyone apparently is like this. Because
there's some Capricorns that I'm like, wait, y'all's energy level's different mine. I gotta chill.
We're super chill. But yeah. Anyways, love you guys and love the listeners.
Before we end it, Pat, where can we find you on the internet? Where can we find the podcast that you are on, etc.?
So you can follow me on Instagram at pat.arregin, A-R-R-E-G-U-I-N. I also have a Twitter. The at is at pat.dot.arregin, because I had to make things difficult for people. The podcast that you can listen to me on, discuss my little hipster trash music recommendations that everybody likes to say I have, is De Colores Radio. You could find us on Spotify or SoundCloud or Stitcher, Google Play, all that stuff.
iTunes.
You can pretty much hear me talk about books, praising libraries. music, film, all kinds of things. I talk about really random stuff. But yeah, you can find me there on De Colores Radio.
Awesome. And you can find us at CYC Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. My personal is MYTE Panda.
Mine is at Fried Papita.
And leave both De Colores Radio and us 5 stars, because that's going to help us a fuck ton. And follow us on Patreon for extra episodes if you want.
Yes.
Support these women because they're amazing and powerful.
And every bit of money goes back into this podcast.
Yeah, microphones, travel, all that shit's super expensive, and we're too broke.
Not even fucking travel.
Just trying to make this shit go.
Not even fucking travel. We like literally pay, like, yeah, parking for guests. Like, that's what it is. But yeah, we adore you and love you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.